Mars. Has it been a year? 10? I don't know, I have no sense of time anymore. Time is the fire in which we all burn, I think, as Malcolm McDowell said in a bad Star Trek movie. It's doubly true, of course, if you're burning in an actual fire. But I don't know. All I know is that every 33 minutes or so, I get pitched back another 10 years. And you know why, don't you? Of course you do, because you're listening to The Diner. Lord knows how, but somehow this is getting back to you, and I am James Lilacs, who would love to be with you in 2007. But I'm presently in 1967, and we'll be here for the next 33 minutes or so until the shift happens. See, the way it goes is like this. Oh, I tire of explaining this. I'll just have to do it quickly, then. The Diner was sold at the beginning of the year. Therefore, at some point in the future, by which I mean, oh, say, the summer of 2007, the winter of 2008, me, James Lilacs, in order to keep the Diner from being sold in the past, sent back to the spring of 2007 a giant 9-foot Terminator robot, you know, from the future, which is where they all come from, shaped like the Pillsbury Doughboy. Why, I don't know. I'm sure it'll become apparent to me in the future when I build the damn thing. Anyway, what happened is that this is supposed to be some tool, I guess, to help me keep the Diner from being sold, but all it's doing is sending me back in time. It leaped up on top of the Diner, there was a great rumble, and the next thing I knew, it was 1997, and then again and again and again. So here I am in 1967, waiting for this to stop, and I know that when 33 minutes elapse and I don't go back in time, that I'm supposed to be at the moment where I'm supposed to do whatever it is I'm supposed to do. Which is really frustrating because I'm the guy who set this thing up in the first place and neglected to send instructions, which is entirely typical. I'm the IRS's dream. Anyway, here I am in 1967, and thank you for listening. I have no idea what... I assume I'm going to do the same thing that I've been doing for the last couple of hours or weeks or years or however long it's been. Playing the radio. Can't use the jukebox. Jukebox is worthless. It just... only plays as time goes by, which was funny the first 10 times, but now is really creepy. So I'll be turning on the radio here, and it's curious to see exactly what sort of radio I'm going to get. Because I think our recollections of the 60s are different than what the 60s actually were. Let me preface this by saying, I have no idea what the 60s were like. Everybody has a decade in their life in which they were, young. And unformed, and not entirely cognizant of the intricacies and details and great battles that raged across the world. Oh. Stupid fly. I'm going to be trapped in all eternity with a fly. At least I know I'll have something to amuse me for a while, tracking it down. I'll spend 100,000 years building an elaborate trap for the fly. Anyway. Everybody has a decade in which they're a little kid, and you just don't know what's going on. You're thinking little kid things. You have little kid pursuits. And you only really apprehend the nature of the decade later when you study it, and you study its artifacts. Of course, as I've often said, it's very difficult to reconstruct an era from its commercial artifacts, from its ephemera, from its music. You can try, but it's essentially like trying to piece together a snowflake based on looking at a blob of melted water. Melted water, yeah, that'll be my next invention when I get back to 2007. Melted water in a handy, portable, liquid form. You know what I mean. Unless you're there, you don't know exactly what it's like. And there's all these things that we forget and we'll never know because nobody set them down. Because they were quotidian. They were just the minor little details of life that nobody could possibly think were worthy of remembering. For example... we can probably guess what people smelled like based on some of the colognes that remain. But, you know, every time an old guy dies, they clean out his cologne cabinet. And generally speaking, in that cologne cabinet is stuff that goes way back. There's some high karate in there. My father, who's still alive, God bless him, had a collection of colognes from around the world. Small little tiny bottles. Finland, Scotland. You know, Scotland. Smelled like smeared haggis in the sun or something. I don't know. But all of those went out, and that's a pity, because they would have told you what people thought they ought to smell like in 1967. So when you reconstruct, you have to go with what you have. And it depends, as they say, who's writing the histories, isn't it? And the victors, when it came to the 60s, were the boomers, especially the countercultural varieties, either those who participated in the counterculture or who subsequently wanted to seem cool and told everybody that they were a participant in the counterculture. There were, of course, millions of men and women who had nothing to do with it and wanted nothing to do with it, and to this day eschew any connection to Haight-Ashbury, Berkeley, free love, peace, man. But nevertheless, that seems to be the narrative, isn't it? That in November 1963, instantly the culture changed, and we went from being a fairly straight-laced, straight-tie, skinny lapel, you know, JFK, New Frontier kind of society, instantly, overnight, like that, all of a sudden we had Vietnam raging and hippies. And the hippies won. And the hippies came to dominate everything. That's kind of how it seems. After all, was not Laugh-In the most popular show of its time? Well, it was a 70s show, but it was a 60s emanation. Did not the counterculture come to swamp the old culture? Well, eventually, yes. Only when the old culture got tired. But the thing about the counterculture you have to remember is that in order for it to have been called the counterculture by everybody, that meant that there was another culture to which it was counter. In other words, it was the underculture. It was the thing that was coming up. It was not the dominant culture. The dominant culture was big cars and rock and roll music and astronauts and bad TV and sideburns and short-sleeve polyester shirts and a certain amount of hip nerd squareness that would be, you know, done away with by the time the 70s rolled around. But the 60s, at least up until everything collapsed in about 68 and 69 and the whole society, as far as I can tell, went into the wearing blender, which was set on Puree, that it was a different thing than that which we're brought up to believe was there, if you know what I mean. What did I do in 1967? I have no idea. I don't know what I was interested in. I was in fifth grade, I guess. I know that in fourth grade I was interested in the Titanic because I have a book, a notebook from fourth grade, from 1966, which had on the front of it astronauts in those great classic hard science fiction illustrations with a silver donut space stations and the men in the Michelin suits leaping around the moon and all the rest of it. The future that would be mine by the time I was at least 18. Sure of it. Matt Mason. There we go. I just remembered that. Since I was a space kid in fourth grade and fifth grade, I must have been interested in Matt Mason, a Mattel toy. And if it's Mattel, swell, and it was. These were these little bendy guys. I never was into G.I. Joes. There's something that scared the hell out of me about G.I. Joe. That scar on his face, that blank expression. No, I wasn't a G.I. Joe kind of kid, and I knew it. Matt Mason, though, that was a different thing. He slid around the moon on these cool little moon sliders, and he had this walking machine that with sort of spokes that would go over boulders, over moonscapes that you would construct in the back of your yard. And I had two or three of them, which meant that I always had one that I could burn and dismember and have subject to various indignities that young boys are fond of visiting upon their beloved toys. So I was into that. I was into the Titanic, too, which must have meant that I saw at some point A Night to Remember. Because in this book with the space illustrations on the front, I had drawn the Titanic sinking and exploding. Because it can't just sink. It's got to blow up at the same time to be really, really boy cool. So there's flames shooting out of the smokestacks, but it was also a schematic that indicated where the bedrooms and the boilers were. I was into science. I was into Tom Swift. I was into all the nerdy little sort of plump boys with glasses type things, all the things we would dream about in our wonderful world of the future to come, best expressed by that painfully sad and wonderful Donald Fagen song, International Geophysical Year, which I'd play, but I don't have a jukebox. All I have is a radio. So let's turn it on and see what we have. Do we have something from the counterculture 1967, which I'll have to admit had its moments, or something from the cultural 1967? Flip a coin, ladies and gentlemen, place your bets. I'm turning on the radio right now. I'm going to take a guess and say counterculture. What do you think? Daisy's eye? Daisy's eye? Roses aren't born, they're... Get away from me, you smelly... Don't touch my child. Not even if you washed them first. Signed everybody, didn't they? Man. You know, I'm sure that album was made by people who believed it was a great make-out record, because you'd take it back to your pad and put it on and show your old lady how spiritual you were because you connected with the power of flowers. But in truth, it was probably bought by a half dozen guys who used it to sift the seeds from the weed, if you know what I mean, and then got stoned on a Friday night, another dateless Friday night, and listened to this and thought, well, this is crap, and never listened to it again. I don't even have no idea who that is. All right, so we've established that that's the Counterculture Channel. All right, they're the ones who kind of play that kind of music. Let me work the dial here. See if I can find the other station. Found it.
Tequila!
Copyright laws probably extend backwards to the dawn of time, so I better turn it down and talk over it. Loved that song when I was a kid. How can you not love that song? My father loved that song, though, and I remember that. It was one of those things that made him happy. Oh, what the hell? Copyright be damned. Turn it up! That is the 60s, folks. That is what the silent majority grooved to on the way back from the Rotarian meeting, okay? Just so we're clear. Yes? Well, come on. 2 bits! The cord of the radio came unplugged.
Here, hold on a second here.
Of course, not everybody listened to that. I'm sure those who were more used to the soothing sounds of Mantovani found it a little too peppy, a little too with it. But now that I think about it, I was not completely unaware of the clash of cultures that was going on in the 60s, even though I was 6, 7, 8, 9 years old. No, I was a very sensitive lad, keenly aware of the shifts in the zeitgeist. I just mean that I lived in a couple of different worlds, like all kids did. At home, we had one kind of music. My mom preferred the easy listening stuff. She hated rock and roll. Yeah, stuff, she said. Ooh, there's no greater scorn than a parent's scorn for the music of the youth. Yeah, my dad liked country. He had listened to old big band, I know, because I found a lot of CDs, 45s in his collection. But at some point, like a lot of men did, he made the shift to country. And that meant Buck Owens and Ernest Tubb and Tubb Owens and all the rest of the guys. That's what played in his car. That's what played in his truck. That's what played at the station. That's what played it in his office. But every once in a while, I'd get to run an errand or something with one of the guys that he employed, and there were younger guys with faster cars, and they listened to the what were then the hot rocking stations in Fargo, North Dakota, KVOX and KDWB. KDWB, I remember in particular, was a sundowner, and in the summertime, about 9:17 or so, they'd shut off. A peculiar concept to people who are used to information media that never shut up. The radio would just go out of business for the night. And it would say KDWB with a vocoder, I remember, which is that unearthly metallic synthesized voice that sounds like somebody who's had their larynx removed and is speaking through a box. And I also had older cousins who, of course, were deeply into the popular music because it was speaking to them in a way that it would never speak to me. And they would explain to me what these songs were about. They would explain why it was important, like Sky Pilot, for example. Oh, man. I had older female cousins who would just swoon listening to Sky Pilot. I mean, because that was a really deep song. How high can you fly? You know, how high can any of us fly, really? So I was aware of it, but it was a vague, tinkling soundtrack for somebody else's enjoyment, and never really figured that it would be my music at some point. It was in 1970. I think that's when I bought my first album as such, a KTEL compilation of the greatest hits of the days. But prior to that, it was just somebody else's stuff. Still, I remember it in the background in the summer. But what do I remember most about the summer? 1967, being 9 years old, Detroit Lakes, getting the boat out of the water at the end of a day in the hot sun, heading on over to the crappy falling down pavilion to get an ice cream bar. Happy as could possibly be. Probably covered with welts from stinging insects and, you know, about to give birth to a hideous brood of swimmer's itch mites in a couple of days, but happy nonetheless. All right, let's go see what's going on right now at the counterculture station, shall we? To Love In at Fred Sanford's store.
Please take me down to the junk maker shop.
I was right.
I've got all my things and I'm ready to walk. Cause I'm needing some cash, gonna blow this town.
That's
don't go
Red.
For me, I won't be around. Cause I'm going away.
Only the L7 squares say cash. Learn the lingo, man. Wail it. Well, first of all, he's not a junk maker. He's a junk reseller. There's no such thing as a junk maker.
I've had too much to drink, is what you will say.
You sound like somebody who's heard that from time to time.
But I can still think, and I'm not gonna stay.
So go. You're going to be a junk maker. That's your idea of being someone. A junk maker. Someone who fabricates junk from perfectly useful objects. Why is everyone always talking about going down somewhere? Take me down. Take me down. Can't you find the damn junk maker shop on your own?
Please come with me to the junk maker's store.
Yeah, because you have no ambition and you're drunk. Clue to a successful business. Lock the door.
There are colorful trinkets that have no pride. There's a shelf in the back where we can hide from the world outside.
Every woman's dream. A drunk who wants to open a junk maker shop, lock the door, and then hide in the back in a shelf. Would it be sufficient if I printed off a Google map with directions to the junk maker's shop?
I wanna go down. Hey!
What?
I wanna go down.
I get the point. What utter crap. I should check the other station to see. Oh, I guess it's two in a row. see what this one is. Jets over North Vietnam?
Flying kites. Flying kites.
Okay. Resolved.
Flying kites.
Pull up.
Kites are fun. Kites are fun.
See my kite, it's fun. See my kite, it's green and white.
Well, if you don't wash it.
Nothing, it's just a fly. All that's between us is a little yellow string.
But we like each other more than anything. And we run along together through the field behind my house. And the little drops of rain caress her face and wash my blouse. And we'd like to be
Stop
a zillion
it.
Miles away from everyone.
Stop it.
Cause Mom and Dad and Uncle Bill don't realize.
Stop it.
Kites are fun. Kites are fun.
I'm changing the channels now.
Fighting soldiers from the sky. Fearless men who jump and die.
Check your chutes, guys.
Men who mean just what they say. The brave men of the Green Beret. Silver wings upon their chest. These are men, America's best.
Well, I know better than to make fun of this song. I do, however, remember playing this for the aunts. I was taking piano lessons, and for some reason we had the sheet music to this, it being a popular song, and all the aunts gathered to hear me play Green Beret. Ballad of. And I impressed them right off the bat with a series of tonic chords that just set the martial mood. And then I played the melody with one hand, with no left-hand accompaniment. The air just sort of just leaked right out of the room. I could tell. Really need a little snare drum and some guys going, in the background for this one. All right. Well, you know what? I'm gonna switch back to the other station because it's naughtier and stupider and much more fun. Oh, yeah!
Electric prunes for Vox, bringing you the exciting new sound of the Vox Wah-Wah pedal. Let the electric prunes demonstrate the difference. Play it prunes first without the Wah-Wah pedal. Now, listen to the difference when you push that Vox Wah-Wah pedal down. You can even make your guitar sound like a sitar. It's the now sound. It's what's happening. That's why the Electric Prunes, Animals, Herman's Hermits, Paul Revere and the Raiders, Stones, the Seeds, are all using the Vox Wah-Wah pedal, and it works with any amplifier. If you're a professional musician or want to sound like one, get with the new Vox Wah-Wah pedal at your Vox dealer now.
Now at Penny's, authentic Batman toys and games, new and exciting. Wow! Batman and Robin color portrait, $1. Batman periscope, 77 cents. Batman doll, only $9.98. Batman horn, 77 cents. Batman card game, exciting fun for $1.19. Batman game by Milton Bradley, only $2.66. Batman and Robin button, 33 cents. Authentic cape and mask, 99 cents a set. Batman belt, only a dollar. And a wrist radio for only $3.99. Now at 7 Big Penny stores, North Park, Big Town, Richardson, Casa View, and Lancaster, Keyston, Dallas, Seminary South, and Richland Hills, and Fort Worth. Be the first to have one of these new toys or games and receive free trading cards and Batman rings. Hurry to Penny.
All right, all you lepidopterists, get out your steel nets and let's go catch the iron butterfly.
Man won't wear off as the day wears on. Man won't wear off as the day wears on. Man, get you through the longest day.
On Van spray deodorant. It doesn't turn off even after you turn in.
Man won't wear off as the day wears on.
Man won't wear off as the day wears on.
Falstaff, the clear beer from St. Louis, brings you Cream from London.
Falstaff,
with milk and make a real big shake. With great shake, yeah, great shake.
Hello. This is Keith Moon of The Who here. Two new Great Shake Shake mix scenes. Great Shakes Milk Chocolate and Great Shakes Cherry Vanilla flavors. Both turn milk into a rich, thick shake. So thick, it stands up to a straw. Great Shakes!
Great Shakes! Great Shakes! It's so creamy, thick and dreamy. Any place can be a soda fountain now. With Great Shake, yeah, Great Shake. So if you want your own soda fountain now, go to the store and get Great Shake. Go to the store and get Great
Shake. I'm sorry, I'm back. I had to step away. I hope the radio provided you with some good music, not just a bunch of stupid commercials. I had to use the restroom, frankly. I may be traveling through time, but the usual imperatives still seem to apply. And when I was in the restroom, I was thinking, as is my wont, that really I'm a little too hard, I think, on the counterculture 60s. Because for all their naivete, for all their irritating winsomeness, for all their flower power or their darkness, their patchouli oil saturated bong water tasting music, they had ideals. They weren't the sort of kind of guys who sold out for a dollar. I mean, I look back at the really great artists of the time, and it's easy to see Frank Sinatra or Al Hurt or any of the rest of them endorsing a product just for the paycheck, for the cheap green of it all. But you look back at your classic rock acts, and I'll say this. The guys had integrity. I mean, it's almost impossible to imagine some of your heavier metal groups, you know, doing a spot for oh, I don't know, Arid. It's just, the thought's just preposterous. So I'll give them that. Boys had integrity. Boys meant what they said, and they said what they meant. Of course, that was the line about the Green Berets, too. So I guess there's common grounds to be found for everybody here. Nah. Well, the clock on the wall, if it's any indication, and it isn't any indication, it's been stopped since I started moving back in time, but if the clock on the wall were any indication, in as much as it was showing the progress of time as opposed to its absence, you know what I mean, it would be about, I think we're coming close to the time. I think we are. Well, I haven't really gotten to know 1967 the way I thought I might. For some reason, I thought it'd be different, but it's kind of just what I remembered it. A little of this, a little of that, some good childhood memories, some ones forgotten or repressed. The usual mishmash, and in a way it's depressing, because you think of the entire decade in which you spent your life a happy child, and so little of it stuck to the side of your brain, but yet you can remember the web address for Pepperidge Farms. I mean, it's just... I'd have a talk with my brain someday. Well, I know even less about the 50s, except from what I've taught myself is sort of, kind of, what I think it was. And I think it's maligned. I'm here to defend the 50s. What a big surprise to everybody that's going to be. Well, I look forward to it. Maybe it'll feel like, hey, maybe the 50s is when I'm supposed to do it. Maybe the 50s is when I save the diner. Huh. Here it comes. All right. Just gonna hold on to the edge of the long boomerang patterned formica counter. And now I presume it's 1957. I feel pretty good. Well, that's it for now, folks. We'll see you next week, which is 10 years ago, which is, you know what I mean. I'm not even going to try to begin to describe it. Thanks for dropping by. I'm James Lilacs, and this has been The Diner for 1967. We'll see you down the road.